You're listening to Dismiss, an international school Suva podcast series.
Welcome to Dismissed. I am your host, Mugabe, and today I'm here with Mr. Andy. Mr. Andy is a teacher, an advocate for the oceans, and so many other things. It's really amazing. Welcome, Mr. Andy.
Thank you for having me.
Where do we start? Because the last time we were in the same room was when you were giving your presentation about the oceans to the year 9 students, and I was part of that. I had the privilege to be part of that. The presentation you gave was really inspiring. It almost makes me wonder, like, did you get nervous? Like, the way you gave it was so much authority. Did you get nervous before giving that presentation?
That's a good question. So I think with anything that you do in life, you're always nervous. And when you're passionate about something, you're always going to have nerves, because when you're passionate, you have emotion in what you're doing. And the ocean, you know, the aquatic environment, and in particular, really keeping people safe in and around the water, is something that I, ever since I was a young child of 4, 5, 6 years old, I have always loved the water. I have grown up around the water, and it's my passion. It's my home. And when I do talks, when I present to people about the aquatic environment, when I present to people about water safety, when I present to people about just enjoying life in the ocean, I'm passionate. So being emotional is a major part of presenting to anybody. And I'm glad that that come through and that you were able to pick up on that emotion, because it's something that has been with me forever. And I love the water. I love everything about the ocean. And I love everything that it can bring to people.
Yeah.
But I also am respectful of the ocean, and I have seen what it can take away from people, whether it's a boat capsizing and multiple people losing their lives, whether it's people going for a very simple swim after getting off a plane and flying 12, 15 hours from a country on the other side of the earth. And yes, the earth is not flat. You do come from the other side. But they jump off a plane, and backpackers jump straight into the water, and you watch these people not understand the aquatic environment. They jump straight into a rip, which is a current of water that pulls out towards the ocean. They lose their footing and lives are lost.
Just to take it back, here at ISS, you're part of the facilitation team here at ISS for the Oceans Program, and this stems from your passion for the oceans, and sort of you want to be involved and you want to get people involved with the oceans. Talking about your experience, because you've done this at different levels. So how does it change at the different levels, dealing with children and dealing with adults who might have different ideas about the ocean and might have different understanding levels? How does it change across different demographics?
So young people are the best learners, because young people are sponges. They take in everything. And a lot of the time, young people are less fearful. So when you're doing sort of risk-averse activities, i.e. teaching someone to swim or going surfing or scuba diving or snorkeling, teaching someone to drive a boat, they're very hazardous environments. And young people sometimes don't assess those risks as much as adults do. But young people are so much easier to teach and to train, because they want to get involved. They see the fun in being involved in the activities. And a lot of the time, young people are also not afraid of expressing themselves. A lot of adults, as you get older, people don't tend to do things and try new activities because they're fearful of how they might look, or it's outside of their comfort zone. And when training people, that is a huge complication.
Yeah.
So teaching at the school here and having young people want to be involved in these programs is exhilarating. it's great fun. And one of the big things that ISS has done in the past is introduce touch tanks where students can come and grab hermit crabs or starfish. They can touch jellyfish. Other things that they've done is introduce a 2,500-liter fish tank. That's a saltwater tank. There's not many schools around the world
that do that,
yeah. that have those sort of facilities. And students can come, they can check out, you know, Nemo and Dory and Patrick and SpongeBob yeah. over lunchtime. And they can come and say g'day or buller or however they say hello in their native tongues. And it's awesome. And that's learning. Young people are the future, and that's where I prefer to teach, yeah.
And could you say that also stems from you being involved with the oceans from a young age? You growing up around the oceans and you having that experience around the oceans, how could you say that opportunity sort of molded your view of the oceans?
So I grew up in Port Macquarie, Australia. It's a beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful country, little town right on the ocean. Mm-hmm. And I am extremely lucky that my family, amazing people, and both sides, so my grandparents on my mum's side and my dad's mum and dad, they are all ocean people. So my grandfather on my mum's side is a champion spear fisherman. He still loves his fishing. He gets out as much as he can now in retirement. And on my dad's side, he is a very, very keen fisherman who would spend nearly every weekend that he could out fishing and enjoying the water. My parents always taught myself and my brother and sister to respect the ocean, but also to enjoy it. From early ages, we were taught how to drive boats and how to water ski and wakeboard. And then as you get older, how to spearfish. So you're now providing, you know, meals and food for families, but you're also coming back to that water skiing, you're having fun. As I got older, I was involved in surf life saving. That is an organization that changed my life and has changed tens of thousands of people's lives in Australia and around the world. I did a number of early beginner first aid courses and lifeguarding courses in my early teens, right through to being part of the support operations team that would coordinate mass rescues, conduct searches with helicopters and jet skis and tens of lifeguards. I've grown up in an environment that has always been around the ocean. So coming back and being able to then use all of that experience from when I was young, take the emotional attachment that I have, my family has. I just love the ocean. I love everything that it has to provide, and to be able to work in an environment that I get to share that passion and that love and pass those skills on is something that is amazing.
The sort of, you talk about respecting the ocean and enjoying it. And you said that you've seen some of the things that the ocean gives and some of the things it takes away. In your experience with the ocean, doing all these activities on the ocean, do you think people sort of garner a fear for the ocean because of what they see it takes away? Maybe haven't got that experience to enjoy it. Would those bad experiences with the ocean, say someone lost a family member to drowning, would they lose respect for the ocean and instead have fear of the ocean?
I actually have one or two friends who are shark attack victims. Both are here in Fiji. One was only within the last 18 months and the other was about 10 years ago. Both of those two people could have had everything taken away from them. You know, they could have very easily lost their lives. But both of them are still keen surfers. They are very, very keen and avid spear fishermen, and they still enjoy the aquatic environment. Mm-hmm. So to say that just because one person has a bad experience with the ocean would send them in a downward spiral that they would never enter the aquatic environment again, mm-hmm. I don't believe to be true. But mm-hmm. there are a lot of people, say, that have a bad experience, mm-hmm. maybe at a creek, maybe at a river, maybe at a swimming pool, as a young person, mm-hmm. where they do ducker under the water a little bit too long, or someone jumps on top of them and they feel a little bit claustrophobic under the water and they can't breathe. Yeah. And that fear is embedded for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And it is difficult to break people out of that cycle mm-hmm. of fear. Mm-hmm. And it can only come through becoming comfortable in that environment again.
Yeah.
And that comfort, I believe, comes through education mm-hmm. and exposure mm-hmm. to the aquatic environment and making it fun and making it accessible again. And if that's just through taking small steps, baby steps mm-hmm. into the water again, getting their toes wet, moving into their knees, moving into their hips. And if that's enough for day one or day five or day 10 mm-hmm. of their re-exposure, that's fine. It takes a long time. In relation to what it can also take away, I've seen life lost in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And that then just makes me more passionate about what I do mm-hmm. and cements the reasons why I do what I do. Because nobody should have to ever mm-hmm. pull someone else out of the water lifeless. And drowning is preventable. Mm-hmm. It is a preventable NCD, and it is something that we can stop, mm-hmm. and that's through education.
When we talk about education, you're not just educating within schools. You have some of the projects outside the school you have participated in here in Fiji specifically. And correct me if I'm wrong, in your last presentation, you said that you had taught about 800 people.
In Fiji, I mm-hmm. have taught over 3,000 people.
3,000 people.
To deliver basic first aid mm-hmm. and CPR. Mm-hmm. In the last 9 years that I have been in the country, there have been a number of occasions mm-hmm. where people that I have taught CPR to and my team in the past have taught mm-hmm. People to deliver CPR, and lives have been saved. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is worth more than any fiscal return.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much money you make. Mm-hmm. At the end of one of those days where you meet someone that you've taught to swim, to taught, mm-hmm. you've taught to deliver CPR or yeah. whatever it may be, when someone's life has been saved
yeah.
or changed, that is what puts a smile on my face. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all want a brand new vehicle sitting in the driveway, and that's why we work. That's why yeah. we have jobs. Mm-hmm. But the emotional return from delivering this sort of training and those things that I have done in the past, that's worth more than anything. Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, you sort of brought up this analogy about the flat earth. And this is sort of branching off in another direction. But relating this back to the ocean, are there people who are in denial of what's going on, of the issues going on with the oceans? Have people lost interest because they thought, like, there's nothing to be fixed and nothing was wrong?
I think a perfect example of that I could give to that question, or to answer that question, is a TV series that is in Australia. Mm-hmm. And it's you can go on YouTube, you can check it out. It's called Bondi Rescue. And Bondi Beach is an absolutely beautiful beach, I believe mm-hmm. about 2.5-3 kilometers long. Mm-hmm. It is located in the heart of Sydney, and it's probably one of the world's most famous beaches.
Yeah.
On Bondi, there's a number of rip currents, mm-hmm. and one of them is located very close to a backpacker area. where a lot of backpackers come, low-cost accommodation spots. And backpackers come, they jump off an aircraft, they go straight to their backpackers, throw on a pair of board shorts or a bikini, straight down to the beach, and they go swimming in a rip. And a rip is very easily identifiable, and some of the key identifiable factors are there's usually no waves. There will be waves that break on the left and the right side of that rip or just behind that rip. A rip usually is identifiable through the color of the water. So you'll either have a darker patch of water or you'll have discoloration in the water. And at Bondi Beach, this particular rip, they call backpackers rip. And these backpackers run down the beach, they run into the water, they jump in the water, and then all of a sudden they're swept out to sea. And there's numerous times where you can see someone jump in that rip, the lifeguards execute the rescue, they bring them back to shore, and then all of a sudden, 2 minutes later, they're laughing, they're giggling with their mates. I think that is the denial stage where they don't know. And that, once again, it comes back to education, because you can't take someone that has grown up without waves, without those sort of environments, and then just expect them to know. But it is also a huge point of denial that they go back, they laugh with their friends, giggle, and then they jump straight back in that rip again, and they're in trouble again, and that's denial.
So what I gather from this is, part of this bigger picture is being an advocate. You have dedicated your life to advocate for the oceans, and through this, you've encountered so many things, and you've seen so many, and you've had so many experiences, and this comes from childhood, your parents, your grandparents teaching you. And what stands out is education and sort of letting people know. And how would you speak to some of our listeners, and how would you want them to get involved?
For anybody that is involved or passionate about any field, and not just the ocean, it could be drama, it could be music, reach out, find those avenues and make it happen. And there's going to be hurdles, but what you put in is what you get out, and that's true.
Thank you for coming on to the podcast, Mr. Andy. I think this conversation's been really insightful for myself and for some of our listeners. It's been great having you on the podcast.
Thank you very much.